Okay, can I ask councillors to take their seats once again, and we'll start in just a minute. Okay, so if we can start again, please, I'll ask the operator to start the recording. And the recording has started, so we'll pick this up again. We've got three sessions to go before the end of the first day. And as a reminder, we are all, well, those of us who want to, having dinner together later on. We will have to move down to the Hilton, for those of you who I don't know who's staying there and who's not, Double but it's just down the road. Yes. The Doubletree. Yes. Thank you. I'll say a few words about that later on, but Osvaldo is the person that we can thank for organising that dinner, so thanks to you. And before that, just a few more work sessions, and the first one is on cross-community working groups and what's been happening in your group, Jonathan.
Thanks, Stefan. So I'm Jonathan Robinson, for the record, and I was or am the leader or chair of this drafting team. So really looking back a little bit, the structure of the presentation I put in, I'll try and take up as little of the time so it creates a time for discussion, but really I try to set the context and the objectives for the drafting team, provide you with an update since Dakar, and then really the substance of this I think is probably to review the draft principles and get any comments. You should all have seen them previously, of course, but I have got them up here in the slides. And I think it's important as well. My reading of this is we also need a basis for a way forward, and we'll come to that as we go through the presentation. So really, the looking back a little, and I'm loath to admit it, but it's probably going on for perhaps even as long as a year back, when this there was the increased use of cross-community working groups, defined here as those chartered by more than one supporting organization or advisory committee, and the perceived importance of these. But there's a broad recognition of how important these are to the ICANN community now and looking forward. But it also began, the increased use of them began to raise questions about whether there were any special rules or guidelines were needed. So the GNSO went on to establish a CWG drafting team. And I think it's very important to reiterate here that the objective of the drafting team, and I may come on to this a little more, but was to assist us, the GNSO, in formulating a view on this, but not to prescribe to the rest of the community how these might work. And so it shouldn't be taken as that, although we did make the drafting team open to any other members of the community to participate in. So really our objective was to develop a proposed framework under which jointly chartered working groups or community working groups could function effectively and produce meaningful and timely reports and recommendations. And as I said a moment ago, the objective being to develop a GNSO-agreed perspective, or at least as a departure point for developing then a broader community understanding of how these CWGs might work in terms of their role, function, and method for in the future. So to date, we set things off with a charter, conducted an effective workshop or meeting in Dakar, which really sort of pulled things together, and made a commitment, which was in the charter. I think it was the original commitment, but in any event, made a commitment in Dakar to get the draft principles published by the end of the year, which we duly did. And then we put that into a motion before the council to consider and accept these the draft principles. That's got caught up in a deferral and my not being at the meeting and various things have slowed it down a little, and in effect we've had two deferrals of that motion until we find ourselves where we are today at this meeting. So the motion, to the best of my knowledge, is on the agenda for this meeting still, and it's something which we should be ideally prepared to vote on. So then, just looking at the structure and the way in which we work for a moment, the way in which we constructed the draft principles were into two major areas. First of all, the scope of community working groups and some subsections within that, and then the operation. Within the scope, we looked at the possible purposes, and in particular, the relationship to the PDP process. And as far as the operation of the groups was to try and look at the initial formation, the ongoing operation, and then the possible outcomes that might arise. And that structure that you see in front of you is what's represented in the document on the draft principles. And so that takes me really to the draft principles, and I think the best way, I'm slightly... What I've got here is three slides covering the draft principles. The wording, I'm sorry, is small on this big on this slide, but those of you with laptops should be able to access these or have records to. I mean, they're on the ICANN sites, and they should be available to you. I've got to be careful to make sure I represent this correctly. We didn't formally poll for consensus. My memory and recollection is that we had good, if not total, consensus on almost all aspects. Probably the thing we struggled with the most and was had the potential to derail us was the concept of joint chartering. In the end, after much discussion and going round on that, we agreed to a position which I think it would be correct to say we didn't have full consensus on, but to stick with the draft principle containing the requirement to have a single charter. And so that could be one of the more that could be the area that provokes discussion. But really, I think for each of these, we had a for each of the possible purposes, the formation, execution, and operation of the CWGs and the outcomes. We had a set of rationales. I'm not sure. Wouldn't mind some suggestions as to whether you'd like to dive in and discuss particular aspects of these. I think mechanically working through each area is possibly not the right way to go. So I'll stop for a moment here, and I think really I'm open to either two ways of dealing this. Either we work through. But within a half-hour session, I'm not convinced we've got the opportunity to go through each of the draft principles. Stefan tells me we could prolong it a bit if we needed to, and the alternative is that we simply pick up some points within this if there are any that there are particular questions or comments or areas of discussion. And I'd encourage you to take this as an opportunity to discuss it amongst yourselves rather than, I mean, I realize there's a drafting team and you may well want to say, well, why did the drafting team formulate this? But bear in mind that the objective of this is to have a GNSO-agreed perspective on these CWGs. So to the extent that you are willing to support or comment on these, that would be great. Right, I'll hold. Yeah.
Yeah, just to add to that, a couple of things. First of all, I think it is worth having a discussion now. Once again, these one of the things that we're trying to do with these weekend sessions is to make them work sessions. So to the extent that we're not just having updates, but we are taking the opportunity that we have of being all together in the same room to generate discussion and facilitate resolution where it's possible. So if we can take at least a few minutes to have discussion on this, I think it's useful. Also because, and Jonathan touched on this initially, I think it's worth making that point. Some in the community, informally, I've been having questions of why is the GNSO preaching to the rest of us on how we should handle cross-community working groups? And that's not the case. Jonathan made that point. But we may want to make sure that we make it as clearly as we can. This is us working to propose solutions and recommendations to the rest of the community. And it's up to them to consider whether those recommendations are worthwhile or not. But it's not certainly not us saying this should be done this way and that's it. There's a similar process going on in another part of the community that I'm sure you must have all have heard of it, because I believe I sent an email to the council list, which is the ALAC ICANN Academy, which is a process that has come out of ALAC as a suggestion to the rest of the community. And I think those kinds of processes are very useful, as long as they're not misunderstood as one element of the community preaching to others. But so this is what we're doing here. And I, once again, if we can, and perhaps you want to lead the discussion, Jonathan, on the points, you obviously know them well, but if we can get discussion, or if we can get a sense of the level of consensus we have at council level on these recommendations, I think that would be useful. Thanks.
Bill.
Bill Drake. Thank you. This one has gone on almost as long, I think, as outreach, and almost in as equally mysterious sort of way. But I think it's worth remembering going back, I can't even think how many meetings, when a lot of these issues especially came to the fore over the jazz process, that there were concerns not just in other parts of the community, but also within the GNSO, because sometimes it's kind of said that we all agreed completely on everything. there at public meetings we had, and also weekend sessions, I think in Brussels and elsewhere, a number of us from the non-commercial stakeholder group did raise concerns about exactly how we did this, in particular on the point of single charters. Many of us were very cognizant of the way the jazz process has happened, and were concerned that if we had been very insistent on a rigorous sticking to one model, that a lot of things wouldn't have gone forward that ultimately some of us believe were important to do. So I think some folks have felt that it would be better not to have overly restrictive language, and that it would be, it ought to be possible to say something like, one charter when as appropriate, or some weasel words to that effect that provided an out, rather than appearing to sort of lay down a marker upon entering into discussions with other SOACs that we were insisting that it had to be this approach. Because one can think about this in various ways. I mean, you can say, well, it's the work is only useful if everybody's on exactly the same page. But I also think it can be useful to say that you take up a work item that's of interest across the community, but yet different players want to emphasize different elements and work on different aspects, but in a somewhat synced way. So, why it should be necessarily be all through the mechanism of one completely consistent charter isn't entirely obvious to me. I think of these as sort of, you know, platforms for shared discussion around an issue, but then it's possible to have people moving in slightly different ways on different aspects of it. So that, I think, is one issue. Most of the other stuff that's in the language, I think, really by this point is pretty... I don't know that anybody has many issues with other aspects, but I think that that was the one that there was discussion. And I don't know if there's any ALAC people in the room who'd want to speak to it, but at the time, certainly, well, I see one waving. But at the time that all this was coming up, there was a lot of people who were looking at the jazz experience in particular, but also Rec 6 and other things, and saying, are you sure you guys really want to frame it that way going in? So we thought it would be useful to at least have an opportunity to have a broader consideration with other folks in the room before we went ahead and just did this. So.
Yeah, thanks, Bill. And I think, Alan, I've got you, and I obviously can't see if there's someone behind me would like to speak after, Alan. That's great. So I think that really reinforces the point I made, that there was a pretty strong, if not unanimous, consensus on virtually all that we put down on this page. And the key area we grappled with was this issue, for the reasons you've eloquently explained, Bill, where it came from, and there was some concern over the joint chartering. So...
Thank you. A couple of things. First of all, on the overall tone, and this goes back to the discussion on why is the GNSO doing this unilaterally. I think it takes some understanding of other groups to understand that the GNSO doesn't necessarily, I think never, says, hey you, Stefan, go negotiate on our behalf and we'll take whatever you get. It just doesn't normally happen like that in the GNSO, and yet ultimately, if all the ACs and SOs are to get together and come to some single rules, you are going to need a small number of people in the room, and whoever's representing the GNSO needs to have some guidelines as to what was important to the GNSO and what isn't. And I think if you frame it that way, people will tend to understand more why we're going through this process. And as open as it was, it is still a GNSO process. That being said, the strident tone in some people's pronouncements within the working group was such that they feel that these have to be the end point of the final discussions, not a going in point. And I think that's an expectation that has to change in the GNSO, because these rules may end up changing when everyone else has to approve them. So that's the generic one. On the two charters, I'll only say a couple of words. I'll remind people that the jazz group had one single charter to start with. It had one single charter because, if you remember correctly, a charter was proposed. The GNSO adopted it due to a scripting error. The GNSO left out one of the provisions. Just got forgotten. Olaf had made a mistake on a slide, and it didn't get approved. The ALAC went back and changed what they did to delete that one also, so that we could work on the same Bible. The two charters happened on the rechartering. This particular set of recommendations, which we're talking about now, is completely silent on rechartering, if the concept exists at all. So it may not be that bad. But I think people need to remember that when we're talking about multiple charters, we're not saying, you know, one half of the group's going to go there and the other half is going to go there, to use someone's analogy. We're saying one half, one of the charters says let's do ABC, and the other charter says let's do ABCDE. So it's not as if they're completely different things. That's the way it's happened. I'm not saying you could have two charters which go in diametrically opposite directions, and the ACs and SOs who agreed to that would be damn stupid in my mind. I think it's important to remember, in my last comment, that whatever principles we put in place today, any cross-community working group that's going to be put together is going to have to be approved by a living, breathing council and AC. And those groups should be able to make rational decisions on their own behalf.
I'm aware there's a queue. I've got three people in the queue. Just as a... From and then, okay. So just a comment, and this is the danger, Alan, and others, with the talking in the abstract, for example, in the way you describe about this joint chartering, because there's no doubt that if a working group could deal with perhaps a subset and there was it's a very different issue, ABCD versus ABCDEF versus ABC and XYZ on the other hand, and I think the way in which we framed the discussion, rightly or wrongly, in our working group was my impression was that the presumption of two charters were working, while not diametrically opposed, at least potentially orthogonally, and that was perhaps where the major concern was. But let me hear from the other. Evan first on my left here.
Hi there. For the record, my name's Evan Leibovich. I'm from Toronto, and I'm vice chair of ALAC. I want to just go a little bit more into what Alan said without going into any specifics of charters or whatever, but just in general to speak of what seemed to be, at least to some people in ALAC, a very strange feeling that here we had a discussion about cross-community working groups that itself wasn't being done in a cross-community method. And since, as Alan said, this is going to have to be something that gets signed off eventually by everyone, isn't it a better idea to have things baked in from the beginning as opposed to bolted on afterwards? The idea of coming up with something internally and then putting out for comment and then getting comments back and then building them in, isn't it a little bit more sane to know at the beginning if there's going to be deal breakers in other constituencies, if there's going to be points of friction elsewhere, to know about that right at the beginning, as opposed to doing this in a silo, then putting it out, and then getting an angry reaction back? Isn't it better to try and figure those things out at the beginning of the process, rather than having them bolted on afterwards? I'll leave it at that.
So, Evan, can I just respond to that? Because I don't know if you're in the room, but we did touch on this briefly initially, but I think the point you make is exactly the point that I was trying to make earlier on. There is no intent here to do anything but hone our own thoughts on this before presenting it to anyone else. And I used, I don't know, once again, if you're in the room then, the example earlier on of the work ALAC has done on the ICANN Academy, which is something that is internal. It's an idea that has come out of ALAC, and it's now being presented to the rest of the community. And we could have the same reaction that you've just mentioned, which is, why are you doing this now? You haven't allowed us into this process before, and we could have deal breakers. I would prefer to take the approach that ALAC has done some excellent work and volunteered that work, and it's very positive, and we should look at it in a positive way. But I would ask that the rest of the community also extend that the same level of understanding to the work that the GNSO is doing in this regard.
Sorry, one little follow-up and I'll finish. So, Stefan, do you foresee the idea of saying a second generation of this, once the GNSO has an idea of what it wants, and then to have, say, a drafting team, but this drafting team has all the communities got together with them all having their act together and all knowing where they're coming from and doing that together, as opposed to a cycle of document, comment?
My personal opinion. What you're asking is, can we have a cross-community drafting team to hone the cross-community drafting team? And although it sounds funny, my own personal opinion is that it's needed. If there is a suggestion from one side of the community, here's a good idea, what do you guys think of it? Then at some point, you guys, everybody, needs to get in a room and discuss it, yes.
So I've got Wendy and Marilyn in the queue. Thanks. I just want to make sure that we're very, very clear here that there's two things, notwithstanding that element of the discussion. I mean, one, in doing this work, it was the work of the drafting team and the meetings, both telephonically and in person, were open to anyone to participate in at any time. So it wasn't in any sense behind closed doors. And I think two is that's precisely Evan, why I've got. I think we need to know what the future of this work is, and that's the last slide after we've discussed the principles themselves. Is well, what where do we take this work next? Where do we go with that? And I think that's a critical question that the community and you rightly should ask. So let's hear from Wendy and then Marilyn.
Yes, I'm coming out of to this increase.
I've got you, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I had also Mary, which is why but you are in the right order. Go.
Okay, so Wendy here, and I'm sort of increasingly dispirited by this process that, we can't. While we need some space for GNSO counselors and council to come together on its view of how to participate in cross-community work, we're then both criticized from outside for trying to think about our own internal process and seemingly unable to reach consensus on that that process for interaction with other groups. So perhaps we just throw up our hands and say ad hocracy wins.
But Marilyn and then Mary and then Mickey.
Uh-oh. It's Marilyn speaking. I was going to say how enthused I am about the substance that's in this, at least as a good place to continue to build on. But I'm also noting for myself that I do think within the stakeholder groups and the constituencies, since we're talking about working groups that may involve more than policy, I think as we think about what that might entail, we'll need to think about what the appropriate process is to reach the sub-entity to recruit from. So, for instance, if there were to be a budget cross-community working group, I'm looking at Chuck back there in the back, who has a history with me and Ken Stubbs and others of remembering there used to be a cross-community budget group. So recruitment would not go to the council for such a topical group, I'm assuming from my read of this, but that this would be a kind of a framework that it's the framework, as I understand it, I'm just trying to seek clarification, Jonathan, it's the framework we're trying to reach agreement on so that in the different groups, SOs and ACs, then we would be able to figure out how we can respond to a request based on the topic and the scope of responsibility of any group. That's what I thought we were working on.
I think that's correct. That's my understanding as well. This is not, in other words, this is not to suggest that the recruitment of a community working group would be from within the council itself. By no means. This is the mechanism. It's a mechanics or a method by which community working groups could be initiated, developed, and have a productive outcome.
So I would just make a follow-up comment. So I would take as a work item myself within the CSG. I would think within the CSG. As we look at this, we would say, so what's our mechanism to be able to respond to a call for a cross-community working group on topic B that's not a GTLD policy topic, which would mean we need to look at this and come back with, and I would think that would be true. I know Olivier's here. I think that would be true for the ALACs and for the GAC, et cetera.
Thanks, Jonathan. So two short comments, I hope. I think first on, and they both relate to the single joint charter issue. I think first is, I don't suggest that we engage in wordsmithing here, but it just seems to me that it would be useful to have additional wording in there, whether it's something like to the extent feasible or going along the lines of what Alan was saying earlier, that to the extent issues develop during the process that might involve a revisiting of the original charter, that be done in some manner, shape, or form. I think that would be helpful because it would signal to folks that it is not a sort of top-down dictation, one charter, and then when things happen, everybody goes off and does the A, B, C, X, Y, Zs. Then the other suggestion, and there may not be time in this meeting, although perhaps depending on the group's availability, and I think, Jonathan, in some ways it's fortunate for us, but probably unfortunate for you that you're chair of this group, because I can't think of a better ambassador for us to go to the groups that have some misunderstanding of how and why we're doing this, and to do a face-to-face short Q&A with them. I think that would also go a long way towards minimizing the misunderstandings to date.
I've got two people in the queue already. I've got Mikey, John, and then Alan. I just wouldn't mind a comment from anyone in response to what Mary said about the issue of rechartering. Is rechartering forbidden? Is it in some way, yes, Jeff?
Yeah, I think this is my recollection. It wasn't just a recharter. It was in the Jazz group, they were done with the first portion, and they made a bunch of recommendations in the first portion, and then they wanted to then continue their group to address those recommendations. And so, for example, one of the recommendations, I think, was to basically set up a financial... I forgot exactly what it was, right? That was the recommendation that came out of the first part. And then they just automatically drafted a new charter that said, okay, that was our initial recommendation. Now we're going to go about doing it. It wasn't a simple matter of rechartering due to some difference in a couple words or something omitted. There were some very significant differences. And in that case, the reason why there was also a significant amount of discussion is, and why we had different charters is we are the GNSO. We have specific things that are within our mandate and other things that are not within our mandate. The ALAC is lucky in a sense because they can address a whole range of things and topics. They don't really have necessarily the limitations on jurisdiction that we, the GNSO, do. So there were a lot of misunderstandings at that point in time. It wasn't as if some of the things we didn't think were worth discussing, but they were things with outside of our mandate. So rechartering is not always as simple as, fixing a word here or there. I think correcting typos is one thing, but then looking at substantive comments has to go through the same process the original one went through.
All right, thanks for that, Jeff. I'm reluctant to get too involved in, although the Jazz is a real working example of where the issue was and what this attempts to solve, we've got to be careful not to get drawn completely, but I appreciate the clarification. All right, so we are now heading towards out of time, but I do have people who've been very patient. Mikey and John in particular haven't had a chance to speak, so they at least should have an opportunity to say something. So Mikey.
This is Mikey. I'll be pretty brief, but Jonathan's being a good scout, and since I was the pretty militant defender of the single charter thing, I just wanted to chime in a little bit. I was on this working group as a customer of the working group because I run several cross-community working groups, and I wanted to make sure that I had a framework that I could function in. In my life when I actually worked for a living, I used to work under arrangement letters. And what concerns me about the idea of multiple charters is it would be as though you were a lawyer or a consultant and you had two arrangement letters with different clients or different deliverables for the same project, and that seemed infeasible to me. So I think the notion of a mechanism to refine or redirect a charter or do a scope increase or something like that is fine, but the idea of having unclarity about whether there's one or more charter concerned me a lot. I was the one that came up with the analogy of providing an airline pilot two destinations for the plane at the gate and saying, I don't think that's feasible. So it was my, and I really was the person who pushed awfully hard in the working group for this. So I wasn't in any way connected with jazz and wasn't really thinking about that. I was really coming at this as just a project manager wanting to have good structures in place whereby I could run the project.
Thank you, Mikey. Appreciate you stepping up to the mic and the cause. John.
This is John Berard. I supported Mikey completely in his quest for conformity. That's operational. My interest was aspirational. As we have talked about a couple of times so far today, the future of ICANN is only going to get more complex and more collaborative and involve more issues that will involve more communities. And so if the current framework is for the GNSO to participate in helping solve some of those problems, then at least we ought to know what our starting point is. That's not to say that it's an end point, but aspirationally, I would like the GNSO to know what its starting point is as we engage in what I have to believe, as we move forward, will be increasingly complex and cross-community issues.
John, I've got to wrap this up pretty smartly. Now, I know Alan and Mary were both hoping to say something. If you can keep it brief so we can just make a couple of closing remarks then.
Very quick. Just two clarifications on things other people mentioned and one other statement. In terms of the rechartering of jazz, my recollection is it was done as essentially by a result of a board decision which asked more questions and asked for further input. So it wasn't completely random, I don't think. In the case of the GNSO mandate, unless I read the bylaws wrong, the GNSO has the sole ability to create GTLD policy, but it is not restricted in what it can do. The plate is pretty open in terms of what the GNSO may choose to take on. And lastly, when we're talking about multiple charters, we're not writing a rule saying thou shalt accept any loony multiple charters that come your way. We're saying you're not forbidden from accepting them if you think they're rational. That's all anyone has ever suggested.
Thanks, Alan. Mary.
Two quick clarifications or points of clarification. First is my suggestion was directed towards actually solidifying the single joint charter, and that may be because I'm married to a project manager, so I totally understand Mikey's concerns. And on that point, the second point of clarification is that I wasn't restricting my suggestion to rechartering. In fact, I think rechartering is a pretty drastic step. I won't go so far as to say it should be the last resort, but it was intended to keep the process flexible, nimble, fairly simple, and not give the impression, as someone said earlier, that that one charter is like the one ring. You know, you live or die by that.
Olivia has made a desperate plea for 10 seconds.
Thanks very much, and I might say 10 seconds to say my name. Olivier Crépin-Ablon, chair of the ALEC. Two charters that are diametrically opposed to each other, of course not. That's totally insane. But a charter that is a subset of another charter, a bigger charter, then, of course, I think that would make sense.
Thanks, Olivia. So it's incumbent on me to try and wrap this up now. We've got a motion that deals with this. I mean, the next steps really were, first of all, to do what we've done today is review, explain, and discuss the principles. I mean, in many ways, this discussion is a reflection of the discussions we had in the working group, in the drafting team itself. So to that extent, that's pretty encouraging because the drafting team appears to reflect fairly accurately the way the GNSO perceives this. It's largely uncontroversial. There is some discussion to be had around the issue of chartering. We are due to consider a motion at the Costa Rica meeting here now. And really, the challenge for us then remains is how this doesn't now become sort of stillborn within the GNSO, and that it actually provides life to some, you know, to the discussion outside, and that the things develop within the broader community to have a consensus on how community working groups work. So,
if I can ask a question, it's Alan Greenberg. Maybe GNSO is not destined to vote on this. Maybe there's enough guidance at this point that you don't need a motion, and whoever's going to talk to other groups to start off the discussion has plenty of guidance. It's not clear you need to adopt it, but
yes,
that's my position.
You're probably right. I mean, it could be, it's an option, but we do need to have some sense of whether we as a group have agreement on the recommendations. And the way we normally do that is by voting.
I have to indulge one of our most experienced amongst us and offer Chuck the final word then.
Wow, final word. Hey, I'll be real brief. I would just encourage the council to approve this, and let's move on to a community working group to work on it.
And to give him his credit, he probably said that a year ago. So, all right, so there you have it. Thanks very much, everyone.
Thank you, Jonathan. Thanks, everyone. Let's close this one. Operator, please, and we'll start the next session with Rob giving us an update on the Uniformity of Contracts Preliminary Issue Report. Which is it? Okay, so, operator, can we start the recording again, please? So we're good to go, and we'll start with the uniformity of contracts. And Rob's going to tell us about when the preliminary issue report's going to come out, I suppose.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Can everyone hear me okay? Well, to give you some background, because one of the things that I observed in terms of the presentations I was asked to make today is that about 40% of the council wasn't actually here, because many of you are new when some of these issues started. And so I may do a little bit more background than you would otherwise expect, and if it gets too dry or detailed, please stop me. To give you a sense, first, there's back in October, the GNSO Council passed a resolution asking staff to begin work on a preliminary issue report on a topic called uniformity of contracts. Uniformity is somewhat of a misnomer, particularly given some of the research that we've been doing over the last couple of months, because the real fundamental issue is how to deal with abuse. how to deal with registration abuse and mitigate it, minimize it, prevent it as much as possible. The resolution that the council passed was very specific. It said, evaluate whether a minimum baseline of registration abuse provisions should be created for all in-scope ICANN agreements, and then conditionally, if so, and that that's created, how such language would be structured to address the most common forms of registration abuse. Well, again, by way of background, this is almost a second look at the issue of registration abuse and uniformity of contracts. It was back in October of 2008 where the board accepted a staff issue report and actually put a working group in place, the Registration Abuse Prevention Working Group, RAP-WG. That group engaged on an over 20-month effort, basically, to develop recommendations, study the issue of registration abuse, and come up with recommendations for the council. It was as a result of those recommendations that the council moved forward with its decision in October to produce another preliminary issues report. By way of status in terms of our work, I think Liz, bless her soul, was very upfront when the request was presented to say, this is not something that we'll be able to turn around in a very short period of time. And unfortunately, I can only report that we've lived up to that commitment. What our hope is that, as we now transition to the new PDP and over the course of this year, that we'll be back on track with this proposal and with this effort. I think part of what I'd like to get out of this session today, if anyone has comments or questions, is where this fits in the overall priorities of the council, what sort of focus that wants to be given on this, because based on our timetable now, as you'll see in the last slide, we're going to be looking toward, a preliminary report, and then some potential council action in Prague. I wanted to give you a general idea about where we are in terms of our research and thoughts with respect to this report. Right now, I have up on the screen, and I apologize, more words than some of our advisors tell us should be on a slide. But essentially what we're looking at is using this as a vehicle to re-examine some of the initial ideas that were presented in 2008. Candidly, the RAP working group did a lot of work, but they didn't complete all the charter elements. They came forward with a number of very good recommendations, but not all the charter requests were fulfilled. And so we're trying to look back at that and really make a determination whether some of those need to be revisited, need to be focused on, or figured out in a little bit better sense. The research that we've done does confirm that there is a lack of uniformity under current GTLD contracts. With new GTLDs coming on board, there's more of a trend toward that uniformity just by very nature of the new agreements that are going to be reached between ICANN and the new registries. But the thing that we're struggling with right now, quite frankly, is it's not just uniformity of the existing contracts. It's really trying to find solutions and have a working group effort underway where the council can come up with some very specific practices or actions that can go into agreements, that can go into the registry agreements, the RAA, that can help influence the industry, with the understanding that this is balanced with the fact that it gives the registries and registrars the legal protections that they need so that they're not overstepping their bounds. So it's been a very interesting but sort of challenging inquiry that we've engaged on. One of the things that's been very clear in the research is that registration abuse remains a threat. And it's not going away in some respects. While there's been mitigation and improvements in some areas, activities increasing in other areas. And, of course, the real challenge and what we want to be able to deliver to the council is a proposal that provides you with some very specific ideas and senses that you can charter a working group and really provide some specific direction to them. I mean, fundamentally, I think where it will come out is a recommendation to establish a working group, primarily a group that will identify and develop specific anti-abuse provisions that the community can use in agreements. And I was counseled not necessarily to use this term, best practices, things that work, identifying a whole host of potential solutions to a number of the cases of abuse that the RAP working group identified. The RAP working group, I think, came up with 11 or 12 very specific types of registration abuse. And I think where we're leaning at this point is to come forward with an issues report that not only identifies the problem, but provides you as counselors with some, you know, potential options for recommendations and for ways forward. So in terms of next steps, we're looking to complete the issue report, the preliminary issue report, within about 3 weeks after this meeting, so that we'd be looking to publish a 21-21 public comment form in early April. Based on that time frame, giving us the opportunity to, you know, summarize, compile, assess public comments, the opportunity for all of you to talk about it at some of the upcoming council meetings, we would hope to have a final issue report document for submission to the council before Prague, and then, you know, depending upon the priorities for all of you, either have you in a position to certainly discuss it and maybe make some decisions with respect to a full-blown PDP at the Prague meeting. And that's my update. Yes, sir.
Thanks, Rob. Jeff has a question. Any further questions, please let me know. I'll add you to the list.
Not sure it's a question. It's probably a comment that's going to get me killed. So I'll just move my chair away from Rob. No. So this is one of those areas where I'll just want to remind people of some other history. The registries and registrars voted no on this PDP. But because of the really low threshold, it got through, right? It only requires one side of the one house to actually approve it to go forward. So I want my statements are based on that. The reason we voted no was because there were so many other initiatives that were going on, looking at our contracts or looking at our abuse practices and all of that other stuff, that we just did not think this was a priority for the council. Nor did we and there was also an element of we thought they were just looking too much into other things that were outside the picket fence. I want to remind everyone of everything that's going on now, and I have no idea where this fits in. But there's already a potential, or there's a PDP ongoing on the RAA, which is already in the works. Maybe it's stalled a little. There's already separate negotiations going on with the registrars on anti-abuse topics. There's already new contracts that have been developed for new GTLDs that have anti-abuse provisions in them that we've never seen the outcome of how they, you know, how they play in practice. There's also a best practices group, or best practices, I forgot what we called it, that's one of the items we talked about, the pending projects that have been dropped, to talk about best practices amongst registries and registrars on anti-abuse or abusive, to address abuse. There are all these things going on at once. To me, this is incredibly premature. It's incredibly duplicative of so many other efforts that are out there. And frankly, and so this is not against the work that you're doing because you had to do it. I mean, the non-contracted parties voted to support the PDP. But we just have a flood of PDPs and action items that were all put into place all around the same time. And I just think we need to stop, take a breath, figure out. I mean, I was having a discussion with Margie and others. We're trying to figure out, the board has asked us to do a PDP on the RAA, but we don't really know what's going on with the RAA discussions with the registrars, so we don't know where that's going to end up with. But the board still expects us to do a PDP on topics that may or may not be already addressed. I mean, it's incredibly confusing. And so if someone could straighten out for me, if someone could draw a diagram, I think I'm using Marilyn's, who talked to us. If someone could draw a diagram for me as to which topics fit into which PDP or which working group or which negotiation or which whatever we're doing, that would greatly help me. But at this point, I don't understand where this fits into everything.
Thomas.
Thanks, Stefan. I have the impression that a lot of work, particularly on this subject matter, is currently underway. You will know that question 28 exactly asks about mitigation of abuse. So I think it's a little bit funny that we're trying to make up new strategies or develop new things that one could do while in the hidden, you know, probably excellent ideas are currently being written down. So I would suggest, in order to streamline the process and make best use of the intelligence in this industry, like we did with the UDRP, to at least postpone this for a while, to see what new mechanisms are being proposed by new GTLD operators or existing registries, and then see which one work best and define best practice from there.
Sorry, we're having discussions as to whether the council has the ability, while we've been asking for the preliminary report to be done, to postpone the rest of it. I'm not sure we have an answer to that.
Anyone feel free to chime in. I've got Chuck and Zahid, but there's some good suggestions that coming out of this discussion. I don't think we can ignore. It's just maybe Chuck, you are a well of knowledge. You can perhaps.
No, I can't help you there. I'll let the others work on that. But I did. Rob, could you move back to slide four, please? Three. Excuse me. The last bullet there, and I'm guessing probably you guys understand this already, but the wording bothers me a little bit. Establish a working group to ID and develop industry and anti-abuse provisions the community can use in agreements. The community is not party to agreements, okay? And there are specific business and legal reasons for that. They should have lots of input into those. I would just be careful how I word that one. Obviously, through a PDP, which is what this is all about, that could impact agreements. And so I'll just leave it at that. You understand it.
Yes, thank you. That's a very good point. When I think of the community, I think of registries and registrars as being a part of it.
Yes, we are. Thank you. Zahid.
Okay, that's fine. There was a working group, a community working group, that identified this with, if I'm not mistaken, registrar and registries on board. I don't know what kind of representation, but there were some there. And this was, if I'm not mistaken, identified as a priority item. I don't know what the actual terminology was, but it was a priority item. It's not one of those low-level issues. It's an important issue that a working group that I think worked on a serious issue like RAP identified. It came to council, and yes, there was not complete agreement, but a sizable number, that is what our charter says, agreed to go ahead and have an issues report. Now, this is not a PDP. A PDP would follow if, supposing there was. So I think it's maybe premature to start saying, oh my goodness, there's a lot of work that's going to go into it. It's just an issues report, number one. Number two, in any case, I'm not so sure that it's not a priority issue. But again, as I said earlier, this can be dealt at the stage once we have an issues report, when the voting takes place on whether there should be a PDP or not. And that's when we would decide, I guess, to postpone or not postpone this. At this stage, again, I'm repeating myself, I know, but it's premature.
Thanks,
Ali. And once it's been passed as a resolution, I think it's very difficult to say, let's turn back the clock.
Any further comments? Jeff.
Right, just to reiterate the point that, you know, just because a working group that was comprised and dealt with God knows how many years, I think it was 2007 that working group started, and then made its recommendations in 2009, 8, somewhere around there. And then there was, you know, things have changed. There's a lot more activity going on anti-abuse since then. And if someone could get to me clarity as to where everything fits in and what topics this group would address that's not already being addressed in every other thing that's going on. We've already delayed the best practices between registries and registrars, which frankly, I'd rather do that than talk about what the contracts say. I would much rather start that first than, you know, talk about the legal agreements. And I think probably the community would agree with that. But again, until someone gets clear in our minds which is addressing which, and I'm getting confused, so I'll stop. Stefan, back to you.
Thanks, Jeff. Any further comments, or is everyone confused? Looks like I have my answer there. So can we bring this to a close, Rob?
Certainly.
Yep. Okay, good. So we will, can we go straight into the next session? Operator, please stop the recording on this one. And start the recording on the Geo Regions Review Working Group final report. One minute. So while we're waiting, let me just, I don't know if I made this point earlier or not, but I think I did, but just for tonight, so please meet in the Hilton by the pool. Is it by the pool? Yeah, by the pool at 7 p.m. I said by the pool, you can be in the pool if you want, but we won't be throwing food at you.
But we might be throwing counselors in.
Well, in that case, tell me which counselors you're specifically aiming at so that I can prepare myself.
Take out all the fun.
That's what I'm afraid of. Okay, so I think we're ready to go with the Geo Regions review update. Rob, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, I'm probably going to give a little bit of extra context and background again for many of the folks who are new to this issue, but I think it's helpful, and then it'll sort of tee up where things are going forward. Just by way of very, very broad background, geographic diversity is a core component of ICANN's operations. And as many of you know, ICANN is currently broken up into five geographic regions, which I have up on the screen there. But why a review of the geographic regions? Well, first of all, it's anticipated in the bylaws that ICANN will, on occasion, look at its geographic regions, review them to make sure that they continue to match evolutions in the industry. And so the CCNSO Council approached the board back in Los Angeles in 2007 and said, this hasn't been done in a while. It's really time for the community to look through this. The board agreed with the support of the GNSO Council. They approved a community-wide working group. The concept approved in 08. The charter for the group approved in 09. The working group is essentially made up of two representatives from just about every SO and AC except for SAC and RSAC. So far, the working group has produced two reports. I think we've got four or five members of the working group at various parts of this room right now. So they put together a very good, I think, set of documents that really outlined the history of ICANN's geographic regions, how they've been applied over time, really spent a lot of time doing the background work. They produced a final report, a draft final report, toward the end of last year. The concept that the working group had is that they would share with the community this draft report in the hopes that they would get community comment, feedback, and things like that. Now, before I get into the specifics of some of the recommendations of that report and what the community has reacted to, I thought it was important just very briefly to highlight for you the GNSO's principles with respect to approaching this. And I do that in this venue because, you know, later this year, the council will be asked to comment on the final report, not draft, but final report. And it may be useful for you all to look back at the principles that the GNSO started very early in this process. This presentation is going to be on the session page. I'm not going to go through the 12 principles with you because I don't think that that would be productive today. But I think it would be helpful for you to go back and look. These were principles that this body adopted back in August of 2008. So it has been a period of time. But the group that worked on it and the council in approving it really was looking at them being some very long-term principles, some real fundamental principles. And so as you all will be asked later this year to look at this, I think it's important that you be aware of them. The council broke up the principles into two areas. One, the relevance of geographic regions by themselves, and then some principles that would govern the change of regions or a potential change of regions. And so I think it's very important to look through those, and whatever group you end up assigning as a subcommittee or as a committee of the whole to react to the final report, I think these principles are going to be a touchstone that you'll want to look at. So again, I'm not going to go into those in detail. I'm happy to talk about any of them, but I'm not going to use up your time today going through them. Let's talk a little bit about the findings in the draft final report of the working group. Fundamentally, they said geographic diversity is a critical principle. It should continue within ICANN. It's something that should be preserved and supported. They really spent some time talking about the fact that it's not just geographic diversity anymore. There's been evolution in the industry, in the use around the globe of the internet. And so when we're talking about diversity, there are also concepts of function, of culture, and of language. There are also commonalities that exist in terms of economic status and other things that are important and that various members of the community could identify with. They made a determination that no one has really challenged, that the number of regions should probably stay around where they are. In other words, that if you were to change the regions, there'd be some significant financial and organizational issues for ICANN as a whole. So that was their finding. One of their recommendations is not to change it. And, you know, after some substantial research, determined that there really is no independent authoritative list of countries and regions that ICANN could just go out and adopt. There are many different organizations globally that have, you know, lists of countries and regions, but there's no authoritative list that matches up with everything else that's going on, and certainly not one that they would immediately call upon ICANN to adopt. I'll note a slight inconsistency in that when we get to the next slide after this. The fundamental approach of the final report that the working group has come up with is essentially twofold. One is top-down, a recognition that geographic diversity was first a principle that was only applied to the board of directors. And so the working group's draft recommendation was ICANN should continue to maintain this formal, traditional top-down structure, particularly for the board. And that if an individual SO or AC wanted to adopt that, that would be great, but there would be flexibility in terms of how SOs and ACs might choose to react to or act in concert with that framework. The other piece really reflects an expectation of a changing ICANN over the next several years, and that's a recognition to support less formal, dynamic, bottom-up type groupings, as I mentioned in the previous slide, of special interest groups that might come together in various forms for different purposes. Common interests might be, and I've given an example of some geographic distributions, small island states, Arab states, or Caribbean islands. A number of these, particularly small island states and Arab states, there were specific comments over the course of the past couple of years where there's been an expression of interest in doing that and having those types of groups get formed. So, I mean, a number of recommendations. These are just the highlights of several of them. The fundamental one that the group suggested was using the regional internet registries as a starting point to look at that as a new structure for ICANN. Why? Because it seems to match the infrastructure of the internet, of the DNS. That's what ICANN exists for, and so that there's some basic logic there. Secondly, and it's a proposal that's received a lot more interest and I think opposition from the community, and we'll talk on that a little in the next slide, is that the group proposed to allow countries to, if let's step back, if you accept the regional internet registries concept or model, then you really have to look at some changes that might take place in the geographic framework. And that would necessitate some countries moving out of some regions and moving into others. A significant number. It's not a nominal or minimal number at all. And so the original draft proposal was to allow in at least one-off situation an opportunity for anyone who is being moved to say, I don't want to move, please keep me where I am. And then two other major areas, considering a more general right to self-select with government agreement so that if a country or a region went that route, that they would make sure that within their own country there was buy-in from all of the significant parties in that country, the government, the internet community, members of the ICANN community who participated, all need to come together on that. And then finally, and I mentioned this earlier, that the SOs and ACs could use the top-down structure if they want, but they could also adopt their own approaches. I mean, one of the things that the research of the working group determined was that over the years, there really hasn't been a cohesive strategic approach to geographic diversity within ICANN, and that at-large versus GNSO versus CCNSO have all adopted diversity principles, but in different ways. And so no one SO or AC really looks the same. And that's probably a good thing, according to the working group members. So this went out on public comment in the October time frame. Community members had through the middle of December to comment. And in general, there were concerns that had been expressed about the RIR model. It's not a perfect model. A number of people have expressed criticisms of it. I think in particular the at-large advisory committee was quite concerned about it. I'm not turning around, Cheryl. And so as a result, that's one issue. Secondly, almost overwhelmingly, that ICANN should not do anything that would get it embroiled in political disputes. And if any of you quickly read the GNSO principles, that was quite consistent with what the GNSO originally said. Another comment that was echoed by a number of players was that flexibility is good for supporting organizations and advisory committees. There was a lot of interest in this concept of special interest groups, but a notation that they do offer not only opportunities but challenges, and a real concern that this not just be viewed as window dressing. I think we're going to have some substantial implementation issues with that over time, but as you'll see shortly, there's going to be plenty of time. And then finally, most fundamentally, that opt-out process that the group recommended and that I flagged in the earlier slide, the feedback was really, that's not a good idea. Let's look more at an opt-in type of approach where you would give individual countries or territories the option to say, I would like to change, versus you're forcing me to change and now I have to, you know, pull everybody in my country or region together and sort of fight what ICANN is doing. So those were all general community comments that were provided. At this stage, the staff has produced a summary report of those comments. We've also published a tracking list of all the various comments for use by the working group. Consistent with what my colleagues and I have been doing for probably the last 8 or 9 months now is that we not only publish this tracking checklist initially when we do the summary report, but we try to keep it updated and ultimately use that when it comes time for a board decision. The concept and idea there is that the community gets to see, you know, the specific comments or issues that were presented by the community, and that there's a linkage to see how they were ultimately addressed. So that's a component that we're constantly trying to strive for. So the working group is going to review the comments. They're going to discuss whether they want to make changes or make adjustments, and they'll finally publish a final report that is not a draft report but a final report. I'm being very flexible in terms of the time frame there. I would expect that they will, you know, finish that sometime in the Prague time frame. What's important, again, from a GNSO Council perspective is that according to the charter of this working group, is that the time the final report is completed, it will be transmitted to the various supporting organizations and advisory committees for comment. And, you know, while you've all, in the case of the GNSO, there have been representatives, and I should acknowledge Ching and Zahid in the past work of Olga Cavalli, to participate in this group, it'll be a new, fresher opportunity to comment in a formal way. After those comments are in, there'll be the opportunity for the board to then declare its own public comment period. And so it's not likely that there's going to be board review and action of this until late 2012. Again, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this today, Stefan, because I would expect that in the next 3 or 4 months, probably earlier, you'll have an opportunity as a council to discuss this matter. And so it was, you know, it was useful here in Costa Rica to raise it with you. I'm happy to take any questions or comments that you have.
So I see Zahid, Marilyn, Lonre. That's about it for now, Zahid.
I take the point that I was supposed to be tracking this, but I have questions. They're more sort of clarification to see how this would be implemented and if you, Rob, would be able to shed some light on them. When we talk about bottom-up and talk about special interest groups, the idea is that countries can caucus around whatever grouping they think is comfortable for them. It's nice to say that in a principle. The question is, what are the rules for that? Because that can change from situation to situation, from issue to issue, one. So that's my first question. Second, I see this thing about one-off movement and self-selection. I'll let you take down the first question. I know it's just, yeah, I'm sorry. So the first one is about bottom-up and special interest groups. The second is one-off move and self-selection. I take that as a bundle. How would one do that? What is the criteria, if there is any at the moment thought out? And then there's something countervailing against that idea, which is that every SO and AC will be able to decide its own geographic makeup and can have flexibility. So the geographic diversity or regions could be different in allocation for the GNSO as opposed to the CCTLEs or CCNSO or maybe even the GAC or whatever, or even the ALAC, right? So here's, I'm having difficulty. If a country is self-selecting that I will be in this region and an SOAC is saying, no, but for us you are in another region, how do you work that conflict out, one? Because these are two very, if I understand correctly, conflicting ideas. Both of them can function. So how are we going to implement that? Because we're giving them, we're giving the SO and ACs a right to move people around, or we're giving the countries a right to self-select. So how's that going to work? What opportunity do we still have to try and go back and work on this draft?
I count four. Let me see if I've got it right. It's interesting, and we can look down the table. I think Mary's still down there. The credit for the concept of special interest groups in some respects can go to Mary and Avery. And in the context of, you know, this concept in some way has come out of some of the work that the NCSG has done in terms of saying, you know, there are other approaches than just this traditional formal type model, that there are varieties of groups, or whether they are around special interests, a particular position on an issue, or again, as I noted, there are commonalities that bring them together to create opportunities for them. Now, you could argue in the present, you know, ICANN structure, if you wanted to be plumber's helpers and all get together and file comments in a public comment period, you could declare you're the plumber's helpers group or something. So that flexibility already exists in the ICANN system. But I think one of the tensions that the working group experienced and felt very strongly was, and you'll recall back to the findings slide, it's not likely, they're not going to recommend that we change the number of regions. And yet there needs to be flexibility to recognize that there's opportunities for these groups. So we give the SOs and ACs within their processes the opportunity to create these groups. There may be, once the board starts talking about this, a growing interest on the part of small island states or of various language groups to raise this up the profile of these issues. I'm not sure about that, but I think the bottom line there was it's a balancing of the working group to recognize that the number of regions aren't going to change, but to provide some sort of mechanism for flexibility. Now, the moment I say mechanism, you ask the question implementation, and I think the challenge there is that the working group hasn't discussed specific implementation, and a big part of the draft final report that I didn't really have the power to comment on was the fact that, well, staff will implement this, and so that creates a challenge. Now, I'm the first to observe, I wasn't around at the time, but staff was asked to implement the original geographic region structure, and what the working group found is that over about a 5-year period, the staff unilaterally, in some respects, moved away from that, and ICANN generally moved away from that. because we started to have new advisory committees get formed, new supporting organizations who essentially evolved over time. So I think that I want to go through the four, and then we can do the follow-up questions. The concept, let me jump to your third question, which was, well, what do SOs and ACs do? I want to clarify, and I apologize if I misspoke. The recommendation is not that the SOs and ACs will define geographic regions. No, no. But what they can do is apply the geographic diversity principles flexibly on their own. The GNSO Council, or the GNSO, has already done this. If you'll recall in the GNSO improvements effort, some of your individual constituencies and stakeholder groups had issues about how do we apply geographic diversity. And there were negotiations and ongoing back and forth about how some of the charters should be structured. So the GNSO has already been a beneficiary of this flexibility, and in many respects, all the Geographic Regions Review Working Group is recommending is that the board formally acknowledge that SOs and ACs are doing this. So let's just, you know, say that they have that capability. You talked about the opportunity to this one-off type concept, and let me explain that and the self-selecting, and I hope I didn't mix and match those. The concept was, in the original recommendation, if the board were to adopt this original draft recommendation, as of a date certain, there would be a new set of structures that would cause certain countries to move to new regions, and a recognition that that would create some consternation or concern. Some countries and territories would be delighted. Others would not have any interest in moving. And so the concept was one-off, was to say, you have one opportunity. Implementation wasn't discussed, hasn't been discussed yet, whether it's a six-month period or two-year period or whatever, to say, I don't want to move. And I want the opportunity to talk within my own community, my own territory, for us all to get together and say, we don't want to move. I think the community feedback came and said, that's unfair. You shouldn't put people in that position. Why don't we create a system where if you want to move, you just declare that you want to move. And maybe we don't even have to change this whole framework or structure. So there's the wisdom of the working group was that we go out with a draft final report first. And I think now the community has come back with noting a couple of issues. And, you know, to one of your other questions, what the working group will now do over the next couple of months is sit down, go through the tracking checklist and say, yeah, should we change that? Should we not? And if so, then they shall do so, you shall do so, and the final report will be then the opportunity for the broader community to again comment on it.
Can we let others speak? I had Marilyn and Laurie next. Marilyn? Okay, Laurie.
Thank you very much. I just want to know what actually motivated the need for this review at the time the idea came. Was there any particular incidents that made people think this region, this geographical region, has to be reviewed?
I think the fair answer is yes and no. One, as I said, the bylaws require a review to take place. And so ICANN's processes require a review. But there was a triggering factor, and that was the CCNSO approaching the board to remind the board that the review hadn't been initiated. Now, I leave it more to CCNSO liaisons or others who are much more familiar with the CCNSO that there were some concerns within the CCNSO about how many of the various CCTLDs are in regions that may not match either where they are geographically, and there are many issues of territories and regions. Yeah, so I mean, there are many issues throughout the community. The CCNSO happened to be the triggering mechanism to sort of get the ball rolling.
So is that Marilyn?
So I think it's Marilyn Kate for the transcript. I think it's kind of obvious to me. I mean, I did read this. I'm trying to remember. I think it was right before Dakar. And I had a conversation with a few people about it. And As many of you know, I work in a number of the organizations where that are primarily government-to-government and government-to-IGO. And I agree that there's no single model for determining the regions. But I'm not comfortable that we have fully, either within the council or within the stakeholder groups or within the GNSO, considered the implications of some of these recommendations, or whether the idea that we need to have the ability for special interest groups to gather or to meet officially, that that actually has anything to do with changing the regional structure. I don't see how this voluntary thing works. I think that there are we have to be politically sensitive to the fact that there are small islands that may not have the territorial they may not have the legal authority to determine with whom they are aligned geographically for a geopolitical purpose. So there's a lot to be thought about in this. We will take it up in the and talk more about it in our discussions on Tuesday. I think I need to better understand what the problem is that we're solving, and I'm not comfortable that some of the recommendations don't create bigger problems.
So, Rafiq.
Thank you. That's Rafiq speaking. I just saw in the presentation mention of Arab states. You are using the list of countries part of the Arab League.
If the Arab League chooses to form a special interest group, yes. I mean, I believe it was the Arab League that provided the comments to the working group, yes.
Because it includes a country which doesn't exist anymore. And in the Arab region, we can even have sub-region, the North Africa and the Gulf Countries Council, and they have really different way of working. So if I am, for example, in some SO, if I am civil society from Tunisia, I really don't want to try to make any kind of policy with people from, oil-rich country in the Arab region, because it's really hard. And then if we make such region, it can make complex for some country there. So we should really be careful to create such new region. Myself, I don't want an Arab region. It will be complicated. I saw it in many space, so honestly, I want to avoid such new thing. And so you say, I think it's the government can choose in which region. So government agreement. So I think for even like civil society, it will be a really big problem. And so that's why, for example, if now Tunisia, there is some changes. But before, if we like in the Arab region, like if it was civil society, we'll be really doomed. I hope to stay in Africa. It's more easy. We can work and make a common policy. If it's in the Arab region, it will be complicated.
Something that the council may want to consider in the future, and individual stakeholder groups or constituencies as well, is to have the chair of the working group, Dave Archibald, speak to you, because he has a really neat presentation that shows the evolution of, you know, how ICANN got to where it is in terms of countries to region, and also some of the statistics that just show, you know, the complete rebalancing around the world of where people reside, who use the internet. And I think the real balance and tension that the working group felt is, you don't want to recommend too many changes to the ICANN structure, but you want to be responsive to these changes that have taken place throughout the community. And so what is the right balance there? This effort has taken a tremendously long time because there's been a lot of thought and I think agonizing over some of the issues, Marilyn, Rafiq, Zahid, that you raise. And so all I can say as staff support for the group is that I know that folks have been thinking very hard about some of these issues, and any comments they get, they take very seriously. Thank you.
Okay, we're on time, or just about. Marilyn, you have a comment, I'd like to bring this to a close, please.
I do have a comment. I'm noticing a refrain, and thank you so much for your comments, Rafiq. I really strongly support them. But I'm noticing a refrain sometimes, and I just want to caution us all about this. We're beginning to say we worked on something for 2 years or for 3 years, and therefore we've worked on it a long time, so we're invested in it. Sometimes you launch a research project or a product development project, and you find out that it's the wrong product. And so guess what? You can either go to market and fail, or you can start over. And I just want to caution us that we don't fall into the trap of saying, because we've worked on something for a number of years, that it's going to be the boat that takes us to nirvana. It might not be.
And if I may, Mr. Chair, the point is well taken. I mentioned that to point out the amount of time it has taken, but not to suggest in any way that the working group would otherwise not listen to community feedback. Thank you.
Right. Thanks very much. I think this brings our discussions to a close for the evening. Thanks, Rob, for doing those two presentations. And we'll see you all at 7 later on. Thank you for your participation. See you later.